All right, welcome everyone to another deep dive. Today we're taking a look at a case that's super relevant if you're, well, if you're a law student especially, really anyone interested in employment law though. It's McDonald v. Mobile Coal Producing, Inc., decided by the Wyoming Supreme Court.
Yeah, that one's a classic, and it gets on the heart of how those employee handbooks, you know, the ones, can sometimes be more than just guidelines. They can actually create some pretty serious legal obligations for employers, even if they try to, even if they try to say otherwise.
Definitely. So for this deep dive, we've got the Wyoming Supreme Court opinions, both the original and the one they issued after rehearing. We've also got a couple of case briefs, a longer one and a shorter one, just to make sure we're covering all the bases.
Sounds good. And just to be clear for everyone listening, our goal here is to break down the key issues, understand why the court decided what they did, and, figure out what it all means for future lawyers.
Exactly. We're going beyond just the facts of the case. We want to really dig into the reasoning and the implications. All right, so let's set the scene. We're in Wyoming. At a coal mine owned by, you guessed it, Mobile.
Right, and our main character in the story is Craig McDonald. He had been working at the mine for about a year when things started to get a little messy.
Yeah, there were these rumors swirling around about sexual harassment at the mine. Now, that's not the main focus of the case legally, but it kind of sets the stage for what happens next.
For sure. So McDonald claims that Mobile essentially forced him to resign. They basically threatened to fire him if he didn't quit.
So he decides to sue, right? And his argument is that the employee handbook he got when he started working there, it actually gave him certain rights, you know, like a part of a contract.
But here's where Mobile pushes back, and this is crucial. They said, hold on a second. McDonald signed an at-will employment agreement when he was hired.
Right, at-will employment, meaning they could fire him for pretty much any reason or no reason at all.
Exactly. And to make things even more complicated, Mobile points out that the employee handbook itself, right there in black and white, it had a disclaimer saying it wasn't a contract. So you can see the legal battle lines being drawn right there. It boils down to whether that initial at-will agreement and that disclaimer in the handbook, whether those things trump any of the implied promises you might find in the handbook's policies.
So it's a classic contract law showdown. You got this handbook that seems to lay out certain rules and procedures, but then you've got these other documents and legal concepts saying, well, not so fast.
And the first round of this fight, it actually goes in Mobile's favor. The trial court grants them summary judgment, basically saying there wasn't enough there to even have a full-blown trial.
Case closed, right?
Not quite.
Not quite, because then the Wyoming Supreme Court steps in and says, nope, we don't agree. They reverse that decision, saying there are some serious issues that need to be explored further. And then, get this, Mobile asks for a rehearing, and the Supreme Court doubles down. They reaffirm their reversal. So clearly, something about this case was really grabbing their attention.
You got it. That double reversal, it's a pretty big deal. And it really hinges on two key points that the Supreme Court highlights. The first one is that they weren't convinced that the disclaimer in the handbook, the one saying it wasn't a contract, they weren't convinced that was prominent enough, you know, noticeable enough to just automatically be binding.
So it's not just about what the disclaimer says, it's about how it's presented, right?
Right, exactly. And the second point the Supreme Court made was that there were still some genuine factual disputes about what exactly went down between McDonald and Mobile leading up to his resignation. Like, what did Mobile do? What did they say? That kind of thing.
So the court's saying there's more to the story. We need to get all the details out in the open.
Yeah, exactly. And this leads us to those two really big legal questions that the court grapples with. The first one is, did the handbook and how Mobile acted, did those things potentially change McDonald's employment status from at will to something else? Like, did they create some kind of implied contract despite that initial agreement?
That's a big one. And then the second question, the one the court really dives into, is all about those disclaimers. Were they conspicuous enough to prevent the handbook from creating binding obligations?
Right. And as you mentioned earlier, when a court uses the word conspicuous, they're not just talking about whether something is, you know, generally noticeable. They've got a very specific legal meaning in mind.
So what's the verdict? What did the Wyoming Supreme Court decide about those two big questions?
Well, on that first question about whether the handbook and Mobile's actions changed McDonald's at will status, they basically said maybe. They didn't give a definitive yes or no.
So kind of a punt.
In a way, yeah. They said there were still too many factual disagreements that a jury needed to sort out. But on that second question about the disclaimers, the court was much more direct. They flat out said, no, those disclaimers were not conspicuous enough, at least not as a matter of law.
Okay, so let's zoom in on that disclaimer issue. What exactly did the court find lacking about how it was presented in Mobile's handbook?
So they pointed out that the disclaimer was just kind of tucked away in the opening paragraph of the handbook. It wasn't in bold. It wasn't in a different font. It wasn't in a separate box or anything. It was just kind of there. And because of that, the court said, look, It's totally reasonable that an employee like McDonald could read through that handbook, see all those detailed policies, and think, okay, this is how mobile's going to treat me, without realizing that disclaimer meant none of it was actually binding.
So they're saying the presentation matters, the placement matters. You can't just slip a disclaimer in there and expect it to be legally ironclad.
Exactly. And this brings us to a really important part of the case, which is the court's application of promissory estoppel. Now, for our listeners who might not be totally familiar with this legal concept, it basically means that a court can enforce a promise, even if there's not a formal contract, as long as certain conditions are met. It's kind of like you made a promise, you should keep it, even if you didn't write it down in a fancy legal document.
So it's like a fairness principle, like you can't just go back on your word if someone relied on it.
Right. And in the McDonald case, the Wyoming Supreme Court laid out a three-part test for when promissory estoppel can be used to enforce a promise made in an employee handbook. The first part is, should the employer have reasonably expected the employee to see that policy as a real commitment? Like, was it written in a way that made it seem like a promise?
Okay, so the wording matters, how it's phrased. What about the second part?
The second part is, did the employee actually rely on that promise, and was that reliance detrimental to them? In other words, did they do something or not do something because they believed that promise, and did that end up hurting them in some way?
So, like, if McDonald passed up another job offer because he thought he had job security at Mobile, based on the handbook, that could be detrimental reliance.
Exactly. And then the third part of the test is enforcing that promise necessary to prevent some kind of injustice? Like, would it be really unfair to let a employer off the hook after they made that promise?
Okay, so those are the three parts of the test. And in the McDonald case, how did Mobile's handbook and their actions stack up against this promissory estoppel test?
Well, the court zeroed in on the fact that Mobile's handbook was really detailed. It had all these specific procedures for things like discipline and termination. And even more importantly, it had language about ensuring fair treatment for employees. So the court basically said, look, when an employer puts this much detail in writing, they have to expect that their employees are going to take it seriously. And if an employee like McDonald reads those promises and then makes decisions based on them, and then Mobile doesn't follow through, well, that's exactly the kind of situation where promissory estoppel might come into play. It's about holding employers accountable for the expectations they create.
That makes sense. But didn't one of the justices, Justice Golden, have a slightly different take on the case?
You're right. Justice Golden agreed with the outcome, you know, reversing the summary judgment for Mobile, but he wasn't fully on board with the majority's reasoning about promissory estoppel. He thought the main issue was whether that disclaimer was really conspicuous. He said disclaimers in these handbooks, they need to be super clear, no room for misinterpretation. He even suggested that the best way to do it would be to have employees sign a separate document acknowledging the disclaimer. That way, there's no question they saw it and understood it.
So for him, it was less about promissory estoppel and more about just making sure disclaimers are impossible to miss.
Yeah, that was his main focus. But remember, not everyone on the court agreed with the majority's decision. We also had a couple of dissenting opinions.
Right, let's talk about those. What did Chief Justice Cardin have to say?
He was pretty strongly against the majority's ruling. His main point was about freedom of contract. He said Mobile clearly wanted to keep that at-will employment relationship, and the court shouldn't interfere with that. He felt like the majority was stepping on the toes of employers and employees to define their own relationship.
So he's coming at it from more like hands-off approach, let the parties decide what they want.
Yeah, that was his perspective. And then Justice Thomas had a different concern. He was worried about the implications for the whole concept of at-will employment. You know, it was a pretty fundamental principle in American law, and he felt like this ruling was muddying the waters. If disclaimers aren't enough to preserve at-will employment, even when they're signed, then what's the point, right? He felt like it creates a lot of uncertainty for employers.
So these dissenting opinions, they really show how a case like this can spark some pretty big debates about the balance between protecting employees and giving employers flexibility. But let's bring it back to our listeners, the future lawyers out there. What are the key takeaways from this case that they should keep in mind as they move into their careers?
The biggest one, hands down, is the importance of conspicuous disclaimers in employee handbooks. Employers can't just bury a disclaimer in fine print and expect it to work. It needs to be clear, prominent, unavoidable, you know, bold text, separate page, maybe even a separate signature.
And it sounds like even with a super clear disclaimer, it's still not a guarantee, right? Because that promissory estoppel principle.
Right. If the handbook itself uses language that sounds like a promise and an employee relies on it, a court might still enforce it. So it's not just about having the right words. It's about the overall impression the handbook creates.
So you got to be really careful with the language, the tone, the presentation. It all matters.
Exactly. This case shows that courts are going to look beyond the technicalities and try to figure out what the real relationship was between the employer and the employee. Did the employer create reasonable expectations? Did the employee rely on those expectations? It's all about fairness and preventing injustice.
That's a great point. So to sum it all up, McDonnell-Vell Mobile coal producing is a landmark case in employment law. What would you say is its lasting legacy?
Well, it made it crystal clear that employee handbooks can create legally binding obligations for employers, even when there are disclaimers. It showed that the courts are willing to use principles like promissory estoppels to protect employees, even in at-will employment situations. And it really emphasized that fairness and the prevention of injustice are key considerations in these types of cases. It's a case that every employment lawyer needs to know inside and out.
Absolutely. Well said. And on that note, here's a final thought for our listeners to chew on. We're living in a digital age, right? Employee handbooks are often online, easily updated. So how should the legal standard for conspicuousness adapt to that? Could a disclaimer buried deep within a company's website ever really be considered conspicuous?
That's a great question, and it shows how a case from the early 90s, like McDonald, can still raise really relevant issues today. It makes you think about the balance of power between employers and employees and how the law is constantly evolving to try to keep things fair.
It sure does. Well, thanks for joining us for another deep dive. We'll see you next time.